Have you ever prayed for a miracle? This podcast will discuss extraordinary events and show that miracles happen every day. These are miracles that have been validated and carry with them a hope we need so badly in a society which has become so hard to trust. Our primary objective is for you, the listener, to feel the weight of these experiences and believe in the source that produces them, for there's no scientific explanation. These are unveiled miracles.
Hello, listeners. This is Mary Margaret, and you are listening to Unveiled Miracles podcast. We are here today with Lydia Mary. It's hard because I'm Mary Margaret and she's Lydia Mary. And we're also here with Andy. We're going to start at the beginning, listeners, to just kind of make this easier to follow. And we're going to go from there. So, Andy, can you tell us about your childhood a little bit?
Well, I was born East Central Illinois, 1957, which was really kind of a good year. Being a car guy, it's favorite year for cars. But I was born, we were very, very poor. Basically, our first house was a Quonset hut. And if you don't know what that is, it's kind of like a glorified chicken coop. Now, I don't know if I was actually born at that time when they lived in the Quonset hut. My oldest brother wasn't sure either. But then they built a really cheap, small, one-room home, and that's where I lived for a while. And then as we scavenged up a little money, we added some rooms on. So as the family grew, the shack grew.
How many people were living in your house, Andy?
Well, there would have been, there was five of us. I was the middle child, and my mom and dad. So
five people and a little tiny one.
No, five siblings and two adults.
Seven people.
The house had grown though. We had a couple bedrooms, we did have one Rambler, one car. So when my mom, she drove most of the time. When my dad would go to the bars, she would take him, drop him off. Or he would walk over from work to the bar, and then when it was time to go home, she had to take one of us boys with her, because women and blacks were not allowed in the bar at the time. So one of us kids would go in there, and we'd pull on my dad's pant leg and say, "Dad, it's time to go home." We did live on a beautiful piece of property. My grandfather, we lived just down the road from my grandfather. And he had given my mom and dad land to build a house. And I had about 20, 30 acres of woods that we owned and I played on. And then he was a farmer. He had about 170 acres of ground that he raised a family on. And he was a truck farmer. He did a lot of different things to keep us afloat. He actually helped finance me as a kid, my family, because my dad was he was kind of a drunk. He was kind of worthless. And my mom and him fought a lot. So I didn't learn anything good about my dad. I'm just thankful that I had my grandfather next door where I could reach out and talk to him, and it was a night and day difference between that. So
you talked about kind of like your childhood and your family dynamics, and that you got to play and wonder, but you also had to work. that kind of stuff?
I wanted to work to help my grandfather because he was such a good influence. And, mm-hmm. and I actually, when I was four, I asked him, I said, can I start baling hay? Baling hay is a very tough job. That's and he cool. said,
I'm just imagining a four-year-old trying to pick up a baling hay.
Oh, my gosh.
He said, you can't bale hay till you turn five. Well, I turned five in January. And then this first time they went to bale the hay that year, I said, Grandfather, can I bale hay now? And he reached down, pulled me up on the wagon, gave me the hay hook, and said, and I pulled the bales back to him, and he stacked them.
Very strong 5-year-old.
So I baled hay then until I was close to 19. We put up as many as 1,000 bales of hay in a day. So that was a lot of work, and I was there for all of them. I was the main guy when it came to that because I started when I was really young.
But you enjoyed it.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Walking beans, we walked a lot of beans. My grandfather's work ethic was kind of odd. We would get to the end rows, and when we were heading to the end rows, there was a lot of fence rows back then before they took all the fence rows out. And we'd say, Grandfather, can we take a break when we get down to the end? He says, sure. So we get down to the end, we'd sit down and get our water out, and he'd say, you know what? While we're taking a break, why don't we do the end rows? Like, okay, Grandfather. And then we go right back to the long rows. So there was no such thing as a break. He got up at dawn and he came in when it was, the day was over. And the day usually was very, very long. And that was his work ethic. He was, but he was the purest man I've ever met in my life. Never a cuss word, never unpleasant to be around. Just a wonderful guy. Big difference. That's why I spent so much time up with him. That's why I loved working with him. My dad was just the opposite. He didn't do anything except drink. And I don't know. I don't remember my dad much.
How blessed you were to have such a good role model. I know I say how blessed, and you just said, well, my dad was a drunk and worthless, but how blessed you were that you also had such a strong male role model in your life to help you navigate those kind of situations and growing up.
I grew up Catholic. I went through the Catholic school system through the 8th grade, and nuns were our teachers. And I can tell you what, nuns are very frustrated women. And they would take it out on us guys with the steel-edged rulers on our knuckles. When I got out of the Catholic school, or the Catholic church and the Catholic school, I went into public school. I went a little bit crazy. I learned at that point I absolutely hated religion. I hated anybody that had anything to do with religion. I just wanted to run free.
Pause for a second. Wasn't your grandfather a Christian?
Mm-hmm. You know, my grandfather was very much a Christian. I never heard a single cuss word from him. He was French, made fantastic wine. He was a great role model, not because he made wine, but we had 30-some hives of bees, so I learned to work with bees. I learned a lot of different things from my grandfather. I don't know... what I could say, I could never say a single bad thing about my grandfather, but I learned to dislike my mom after she got divorced from my dad, and she got involved with PWP. Then she got involved with Jim Baker and I forget what religious group that was, and I thought it was crazy and how much money she was spending on that when she didn't have any money. And I learned to hate my mom, walked away from my family. I was an angry young man at that point in my life.
Yeah, it sounds like you kind of gave up on everything. You gave up on your family. your friend and God.
What our listeners should get out of this is that Andy's childhood was one of undiscipline from adults. I mean, not only were the children not necessarily disciplined, but the adults weren't very well behaved. So we're going to see, as we discuss Andy as an adult, a similar pattern. Mm-hmm. So tell us about adulthood.
You know, I was always, I would say, a good person in what I thought a good person was. I was a hardworking guy. I paid my taxes. I wasn't mean to people unless I didn't like you. Once I got out of high school, I went to a college, junior college, didn't know what to take, ended up getting a machinist degree, didn't know what I was going to do with that. So I went to building custom-built farm trailers for a gentleman north town, somebody that my sister had dated. Worked for him for a year. He was going to have to lay me off. He called the division director of a printing company, asked him if, said, do you need a guy? And he says, is he worth the darn? He goes, yeah, he's okay. So they hired me on a Friday, and Monday they made me fill out an application. And that job, I started it. Yeah, it's not going to sound like very much, but this is back in the 70s. I started at $3.90 an hour.
Big money.
It was big money. wasn't so much that how much I made per hour. It's that if I wanted to make more money, all I had to do was sign up for more hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those plants that ran 365. It was always running. It ran all the time. The amount of money you made was limited on the amount of hours you wanted to work. And I got to where I was taking 2 days off per month.
Yeah, and you weren't afraid of work by any means. So.
No, I'd grown up, I knew what hard work was. So over time, I would see something I wanted and I would buy it. Well, I had it. That was nice. But it got put back to the side because I had no time to enjoy anything that I had. And I had a lot of stuff, and I just kept buying. I kept buying. I kept buying. I've got a lot of stuff inside me that I hold back that you won't hear about that shaped me into the person I am,
mm-hmm.
or the person I was.
Mm-hmm. Well, Romans 8 says God will turn everything to good for those who love him. So all those bad things that we go through, and we also know that he's known us from the beginning, and he set us apart. Even if we don't have any idea what that means at the time, it still means he has a plan. So let's discuss when you moved to your position at Donnelly's and what that was like for you.
And I had a friend that was a really good disco dancer. There was a discotheque about 40 minutes away, very popular. So we would go down.
Take you down to Funky Town?
He ended up taking me down to Funky Town. And yeah, and he was such a good dancer that the women just all wanted to dance with him. Well, because I was his friend, and have them, I'd go home with him. Mm-hmm. Never really cared about anybody. They were something to use and put by the wayside.
Mm-hmm. So you're involving yourself with these women. Did you think or consider at all, like marriage and children and things like that? Or did you?
No, actually, I never thought once about marriage.
I didn't think so.
I knew at the age of 10, I did not want to have any children. I knew that.
Why is that? Do you know?
Yeah, I do know. Something my grandfather said to me when I was that age. He told me that he knew that there was a problem with feeding the world. And he said, if you decide not to have kids, that would be great because there's too many people on earth right now anyway.
Oh, my heart breaks.
So I decided. I mean, I literally took, my grandfather was,
But I do know that coming into your story,
is marriage. I want to hear about Shannon. I want to know, how did you find Shannon? Because she is a lovely lady.
Well, back in 1978, I bought a new black Thunderbird, the very first new car that I had. I had two other cars, but it was time to get a new car. So I ordered a new black Thunderbird, and it came in, and I was, we would go on what they call Drag Broadway. It was the main street in town, and we drive up and down the streets, and we pick up ladies. And that's what, that's how I ended up meeting my wife, although there were three girls in the car, and I went out with one of the other ones first. But I finally ended up going out with her. And that is the first time that I'd ever been in love.
Oh, my heart. The first time you've ever been in love. That's so sweet. Listeners, we are at a great point in this episode where I get to invite and introduce you to Shannon. Shannon, what would you say is maybe your first memory of Andy?
I think at the time I was only 15 or 16 when I met him, but I saw him on Broadway. Back in the day, we cruised Broadway. And I was with my girlfriends and pulled up next to this car with a couple guys and thought he was pretty handsome. Mm-hmm. But he went out with my friend first.
Ugh. We are aware that Andy doesn't always make the best choices.
So
he's a slow learner sometimes.
Yeah, it's okay. So, but I remembered thinking that that I was pretty... you know, he caught my eye. Mm-hmm. So I happened to know, because we were from different towns, I happened to know a person that knew him. And so I was able to get in touch with him. He lived with his grandmother. And I called. And girls back then really just didn't call the boys. But my friend said it was okay. And, so I called and his grandmother answered and said he had just left to go to town. And so I just took a chance. I said, I'm Shannon. This is my phone number. And she said that he would call me back. Well, in like just 5 minutes, he called because he had forgotten something and it came back in the house. So
look at that.
Yep. So we had a date, but I was still in high school. He was already graduated from Lakeland. Mm-hmm. So being 5 years older than I am. So it was kind of like,
I have seen crazier age gaps.
Well, my mom and dad was 10 years apart. So, you know, it wasn't, she couldn't say a whole lot, but so we had our first date. And the rest was history.
Where was your first date?
I think, well, he came, no, I remember. He came to a ball game, a volleyball game.
Oh. Did you play volleyball?
Yes.
No way. Yes.
So he came to a volleyball game. And then I think our first date was actually, he took me to, it was Fat Albert's back in the day. It's the Alamo now.
Yeah, Alamo.
And okay. Took me for steak.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, steak is so good.
I was making $4.20 an hour, so I could afford it.
You could afford a good steak.
Steak was about $4.20.
You could afford a good steak. So. What are you thinking about your future? Are you thinking about your future? Are you writing Mrs. Andy Trueblood in your notebooks?
Well, I don't think I did that, but I knew I was going to marry him. We did live together. I was the first one of my family to do something like that. So my mom wasn't very happy. Mm-hmm. And she did make have a little conversation with him that said, and she said, if you think anything of my daughter, you'll marry her. And
I like your mom so much.
We immediately got married. It was June 13th, He's like, she's like, pick a date. And he picked June 13th, and that's his lucky number.
Nice.
Yep.
What a blessed day for you, buddy. And for you, but mostly for you. So you guys are married. Where was your honeymoon?
We didn't take one. We both spent most of our time working, but we did. I mean, there were a few vacations, very, very few. But we saved, and he saved a lot of money by building our own house. Mm-hmm. So the majority of the house was built by him. I mean, it was, the outside structure was put up, but he did like all the drywall and the electrical and laid the floors and did all that. So it was a labor of love. I think we bought the property and saved and paid that off and worked on clearing that land until we built the house. And so it was something that we both, I think we both put our input in, into, mm-hmm. But it was a lot of time. That mm-hmm. was, that was what we did.
Yeah.
And we filled it with nice things and,
very much so. And had you ever really saved before then, or did you always just spend money?
I always spent.
Making it rain.
It went out pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Unless there was something that I really, really wanted. I think that house was probably the first thing. The land in the house was probably the first thing that I really wanted to save some money for.
Mm-hmm.
And,
not settling for a Quonset, huh?
No. Build a beautiful, is a beautiful home. So I built it for her and I, and I didn't care what anybody else thought. We didn't really have very many friends. We had almost no friends, didn't we?
But we were, you worked all the time.
We worked all the time.
So it was just, I mean, we had a few friends, but we didn't really hang out with people per se.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just him and I.
What was your favorite thing about the house?
My favorite thing about the house was the upstairs bedroom. Our bedroom had the little dormer windows that just you could walk out into. And it had an angled roof line, the bedroom did. And it was just, I don't know, it was just really cozy. And our family room was right off the bedroom. It was upstairs that overlooked. And I don't know. It was surrounded by woods and you could see the pond, and there's a lot of things that's favorite.
Andy, what was your favorite thing about the house?
I just love the fact it was set back in 8 acres of all woods, and I had a 1 acre pond in the front yard. It was an extremely beautiful home, and it's something that I dreamed about for a long time before I built it. So
the house is very beautiful. And did you feel like you did surpass?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought everybody.
Yeah. I thought so. So you weren't keeping up with the Joneses. You were straight up like,
no, I just,
let me show you that. How much better than you are.
I did it all for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care about what other people thought. Didn't care. Everything I had was what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it had to do with neither one of us had anything growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that there was money being made, he was making money. He knew, how much mm-hmm. overtime he could work, that he could have so much more than what he ever had as a mm-hmm. a child or a teenager. And so it was kind of like, I'll show you mm-hmm. kind of thing.
But we also know of Andy that sometimes you weren't the nicest fellow.
No, I wasn't. I was really pretty mean to some people. Extremely mean.
Obviously, you spent a lot of time at work. Let's talk about work. Did you have a lot of friends at work, or did you have enemies?
There were some people that liked me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there were some people that didn't like you.
There were some people that just downright hated my guts but never said a word, because no one messed with me. Because I performed so high
mm-hmm.
That nobody came and bothered
me. And his expectations were so high as far as performance. It was...
Yeah, everything was performance-driven.
They expected a certain performance out of him. Yeah. So he also expected performance out of his crew. Mm-hmm. And so he was not warm and fuzzy. He was demanding and downright mean, because I know that he would call people names. And
did you call people mean, like really bad names?
Oh my gosh, girl.
Andy.
I apologize to one guy.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
At least one guy. Well, I apologize to one guy.
I apologize. I was really, really mean to him. He called himself the California hunk. I told him, I said some things to him that were just unbelievably terrible. So then after my accident, years later, I saw him and I walked up and I said, hey, I'm really sorry.
I'm so proud of you.
And he turned around.
Oh.
Walked away.
Oh. You know what? Yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah. He just walked away.
Yeah.
He didn't say a word, just walked off.
But you did what you needed to do.
I did what I did. I did what God wanted me to do.
I'm proud of you for that. Yeah. That's very good. It is hard to fess up.
Yeah.
All right. So my question is now, what does the average day in the Shannon and Andy household look like before the accident?
Well, Andy typically worked 12 hours, and so our schedules didn't always match. So we had two dogs, and so I would wake up in the morning because he would still be at work. So dogs were taken care of, dogs were fed, let up, put outside, food might be put in the crock pot, and then I'm getting ready for work. As he's headed home from work, I'm typically headed to work. So we just basically crossed paths, but whatever had to be done, got done. Mm-hmm. Whether, once I got home in the evenings, he might have slept part of the day. And then if there was mowing to be done or outside work that had to be done, we would do it together when I got home from work. And then he might lay down again before he went back to work. So it was just, we were just hamsters on a wheel,
mm-hmm.
pretty much.
I mean, we had time to, we did things. We went places.
We had a couple of nice boats. We would take those once in a while and go somewhere and take a vacation and enjoy things.
But not very often.
Not very often at all.
Yeah. Tell me about the day of the accident.
Well, I went to work September 11th, 2001. Everybody remembers that day in the history of America. I went to work September 10th. Going to work from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. on September 11th. And at midnight, I'd ridden my motorcycle to work, which September 10th, the weather was still decent. Didn't know it was going to get cool that night. I always took my helmet with me, but I never wore my helmet. So to the 11th at midnight, they started playing the one-year anniversary tack, America, on CNN, which was what was on in the lunchroom at work. Went in there and I watched a little bit of that and was mad about it. And when the day shift crew came in at 7 a.m., they usually get there about 10 till 7 to relieve us so we could go home. We talked about the terrorist attack the year prior. And there was a lot of anger by everybody about that. So I went in, talked longer than we should have. I went in. I knew I had to get home. Changed my clothes. Went out. walked outside, realized I need to put my helmet on. So I grabbed my helmet out of the back and put it on. That's the last memory I have.
What Andy does not remember is that on the date of September 11th, 2002, Andy was thrown from his motorcycle headed home going over 100 miles per hour. He was thrown from the motorcycle after colliding with a vehicle, his body found in a ditch over 20 feet away, unresponsive. The officer on site identified Andy as dead on scene. Arriving paramedics referred to Andy as load and go. They would further analyze the trauma on the way to the emergency department. And this, listeners, is where we leave you and Andy waiting on a miracle. Come back for the next episode, Book of Andy, to be loved, where we discuss the aftermath of this life-changing event, unveiling a miracle.